Izzy and Ozzy, Lizzy, Izzy, Izzy and Ozzy, Lizzy. Is it because he is a Nazi that he keeps you busy, Lizzy? As he jazzy ways and does he make you go all fuzzy, wuzzy? Got you dizzy, Ozzy, Lizzy, Izzy and Ozzy, Lizzy.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Entertainment live on 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac, alongside Joseph J. Erdo, Eric Reinert, Trisha, Greg on location, and we'll be here soon. And this is Jeepers Creepers by Mr. Reeves.
No, is he an Aussie, Lizzie? Is he? Is it because he is an Aussie that he keeps you busy, Lizzie?
Has never heard
jazzy
of
ways
I used
and
to,
does he make
I used
you
to hear
off,
Romper
fuzzy,
Room.
Wuzzy?
Is this from Eric? Is this from Romper Room?
I don't know, Dave. I guess I should say I was that young.
Oh.
Be in Romper Room.
Mr. Flotsam and Mr. Jetsam. This is Izzy and Ozzy, Izzy Lizzie, from the movie that I'm advertising from with my shirt, The Purge.
The Purge.
It's the song that plays during the end credits for The Purge, a very scary movie. It was on my best list the year it came out. And I don't think he's an Aussie.
No.
But we've got on a really special guest right now. Of course, I just gave a thumbs down to Insidious Chapter 3, but I still give a thumbs up to the concept of using weird music for these horror movies and changing the context. And as Dave was explaining earlier in the show, that is what we really want to dive into with this segment. We have right now special guest CEO Fraser C. Heston of Agamemnon Films. Thank you so much for joining us, Fraser.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
It's an honor to speak with you.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on your show.
Absolutely. So, first of all, tell us a little bit about Agamemnon Films.
Well, Agamemnon is a company I started with my dad, who was an actor. His name was Charlton Heston.
Yes.
And we started this company when we started making movies together back in the early 80s with a film called Motherlode, which was kind of a scary action-adventure movie, sort of a lost gold mine treasure, the Sierra Madre type story. And we started making films every couple of years thereafter, and now that Dad has passed away, I and my son are carrying on the tradition.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's must have been really special working with your father and now getting to work with your son on something that's probably passionate to three generations, no?
Well, that's exactly right. My son Jack is a USC Film School graduate. He's actually, he knows more about movies than I do now.
Wow, and you sound so young. So when you said you had a son at a graduate school, that's amazing. You're keeping youthful.
He's 24 now and doing making his second movie this year.
Now, have you acted? Did you you acted with any movies?
No, I was really more of a behind-the-camera guy. I consider myself a writer and director first and sort of a producer by default. I love the creative aspects of filmmaking. I love music. I love actually, you know, getting behind the camera, working out the shots and the scenes and building it all in the editing room.
Now, was that something that you feel came about in an attempt to be able to become closer with your father because he was so busy and so involved in that industry?
You know,
or was it just something that you fell in love with on your own?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. Dad always took the time to take me around the world with him and Mom and my sister Holly when we could get out of school. I sort of grew up on movie sets all over the world. We lived in Rome for a year when Dad made Ben-Hur. We lived in Spain for a year when Dad made El Cid, and so on. And so it was a great upbringing for someone who wanted to be a filmmaker. However, that wasn't my desire. I wanted to be an oceanographer. I wanted to be somebody like Jacques Cousteau.
Nice.
And I studied that for a little while in college, and then just sort of decided I wanted to become a writer, and from there my parents encouraged me in that. I don't know why. They did discourage me to be an actor. They felt that it was really a tough row to hoe, especially if you were the son of a famous actor. There are very few actors' children have succeeded them successfully. I guess Michael Douglas might be an exception, and there are a couple other really good ones. But they did encourage me to develop my writing, and from there I became a screenwriter, and from there a producer, and then a director.
Nice. Yeah. So, Fraser, tell us a little bit about your thoughts as to music and how its importance in film, you know, from a behind the scenes perspective?
Well, it's really important, and it's really fun. It's one of the great things that I enjoy about making a film. I guess one of the best moments in a film is when you first hear the score for your movie played, often with a live orchestra and a conductor, with the movie playing on the screen behind it. It's just a great, great moment. It's when the kind of the raw emotion that you imagined, if the score is good and if it's right for the film and if you have good synergy with your composer, it's one of those great sort of magical moments that only happens at a couple of points in making a film. I guess the other one is when you first hear the actors speak the dialogue.
Oh yeah, and I mean, because you know, because there's two aspects to it. Of course, the score, and then you know, regular music that's played, right? How would you define that?
Well, there's practical music, existing music that might be playing on a record player, say in a scene or on a radio in a car.
Right.
And then there's existing music, what we used to call needle drops, where you take an existing song that people might have heard already, and you put it Coppola used The Doors in Apocalypse Now. That was a marvelous opening scene where they used Jim Morrison's This Is the End.
Nice. And you know, so this is not new, this aspect of using music and changing the context of the music.
Well, that's exactly right. I did a film called Treasure Island, based on the Robert Louis Stevenson novel, for TNT a number of years ago, and I decided instead of having a traditional symphonic score, I would use existing Celtic folk songs, mostly without the words, but just the music, and I got Paddy Maloney and the Chieftains to play them for me.
Now, how do you do that as a writer? Is it part of the writing process, or are all writers really good at projecting out and saying, well, I think this type of music would work, or this, or do you have to actually hear it and sample several types of music to see what fits?
I think a little bit of both. I think that job, and I've worn both hats, is done more by the director than the writer. The writer might suggest a song, especially if it's important to the story or if it's a period piece. He might write in a specific cue into the script, but mostly that job is done by the director and the producers in post-production. Sometimes during production, you'll be listening to something. You might have a favorite CD that you're listening to at night, and you say, boy, this could really work in well with the theme of my movie. Or it might go in counterpoint. I heard you discussing some of the horror films that are using, you know, otherwise innocuous, funny, or pleasant song, like Tiptoe Through the Tulips was an example. That, you know, that song was written in 1929. It was a big hit. And then, of course, it was revived by Tiny Tim back in the late 60s. And it's a really fun, bouncy, little juicy, you know, funny song. Mm-hmm. But I guess if you play it in counterpoint to something that's horrifying, it can be even creepier than perhaps using a traditional horror score with, you know, maybe a big Bach organ type cue or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, my understanding is that sometimes whether you're trying to change the emotion of the song or you're trying to find songs that will bring out the feeling that you want in your film, that sometimes that can take an extremely long period of time.
Absolutely, and it's a process of trial and error. You have to try, at least with a song that exists, you can hear it. You don't have to hire a composer to go write it and then perform it for you, and then you go, oh my gosh, that doesn't work. We have to redo this. And that happens once in a while. If you have good synergy with your composer, I worked, for example, with Patrick Doyle, who's a wonderful composer who did some of the Harry Potter films. He did Thor, and he did Needful Things for me. But I wanted, there was one scene where these two women are basically murdering each other. Amanda Plummer and another wonderful actress are going at it with an axe and a knife. It's basically a horror story, a Stephen King film. Mm-hmm. And we decided to use Ave Maria by Schubert. And we got a marvelous opera singer from the Covent Garden Opera to sing it for us. It's this most beautiful of songs. It's almost a hymn. It's just a lovely, poignant, sad, lovely song, and we put that against the counterpoint of these two crazy old women cutting each other up with knives and axes, and that, oddly enough, that worked pretty well.
Excellent. Now, if you're actually having the composer do something original for you,
mm-hmm.
how would you go about explaining to them the mood you're looking for, or how would you start that conversation?
Well, that's the key. Sometimes you can do it with other music. You might have done a temp score. As you know, we do early screenings with temp tracks or temp music that we find that comes perhaps from other films or existing songs or just classical music. And we'll lay it down, or the editor will lay it in, and that gives preview audiences an idea of what sort of score you have in mind. If you ever watch a movie without score, it just kind of lies there. So you need to have something. And then sometimes you'll give that to the composer and say, look, I'm not telling you what to write, but this is the kind of thing I'm looking for. The other way to do it is to give them an emotion, to say, look, I know it looks like a happy party scene with this beautiful girl is there with her fiancé and they're drinking champagne, but I want her to feel lonely. I want her to be lonesome in this huge crowd of people. And the composer might write something that's totally off what he might have thought of otherwise. So there are a couple ways of communicating that emotion that you want the audience to feel to the composer.
Yeah, I've seen a few, you know, featurettes where they show a scene from a movie, and it could be like an action sequence from a, you know, like say Mission Impossible or Fast and Furious, and with the score it's so exciting, and then like you said, it just kind of like lays there without the music. That's so fascinating to see, and I could just imagine you know, as someone creative like yourself, to see how that comes together, to see, you know, the final product versus what was originally there, you know.
Oh, it's a great moment. It really is. I mean, imagine, you know, a film like Chariots of Fire, which won the Academy Award. It was the marvelous show about the 1928 Olympics a number of years back, and it had an electronic score by Vangelis, the Greek composer. And who would have thought you'd do a 1928 movie with an electronic score? But it worked really well, and it, you know, without that marvelous Chariots of Fire theme, which you've heard on TV and a million things, that movie would really be a bunch of guys running up and down the beach in their underwear.
Yeah, yeah, very true. And so, Frazier, what are you working on now? What can we look forward to out of Agamemnon Films?
We're coming out with a novel this summer, which my company is publishing. It's called Desolation Sound. It's a thriller based on the real-life story of the severed human feet that have been washing up on the shores of British Columbia in the last few years. I think we're up to 15 feet now, and there's no explanation for it.
Wow. Really? Wait, tell us a little bit more about that.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I haven't heard of it.
I've heard about the feet.
Yeah, yeah, you can Google it. If you Google British Columbia severed human feet.
They have shoes on them typically, don't they?
Go to our website, desolationsoundnovel.com. You'll learn all about it. It's a really creepy thing, and there are lots of explanations for it. Accident victims, suicides. The RCMP is big on that one, and they feel that the feet are disarticulated naturally by decomposition or marine organisms.
So, yeah, that's creepy.
But it's a little creepy, and why hasn't it happened? None of them showed up before 2008, and none of them has shown up anywhere else in the world, so I want to know what the heck's going on. And we come up with a plausible and quite delicious solution to that mystery.
I did watch your film, The Search for Michael Rockefeller. That was a very good film.
Oh, good. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's on Netflix now, and that's about the disappearance of the Rockefeller heir in New Guinea and what might have happened to him amongst the cannibals there back in the 60s.
Wow. That's fascinating. You know, we're going to have you on again soon, Frazier. You know, it's just so fascinating, you know, this topic and, you know, anything. I mean, we could just talk to you forever about your father and about your projects.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure to be on and really love your show. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. CEO Frazier C. Heston, Agamemnon Films. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks a lot. You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah.
A nice guy.
Yeah, very nice guy.
And very talented, and what a an experience growing up. I mean, being all over the world with
all those movie sets.
One of the great actors of our time, right?
Oh, yeah,
he was
absolutely
on the set of Ben-Hur. How amazing.
Yeah. Oh, wow. My favorite, though, was the Ten Commandments with, I thought,
yeah, Moses.
Yeah, I like, I mean, he's done a lot of great movies.
Yeah. They play that every Easter, right?
Yeah.
And they're remaking Ben-Hur. I don't know if that's, you know.
It's called Ben Him.
In fact, Charlton Heston's, maybe one of his last films, I don't know, have to check this, was with, it was Tombstone. He was in Tombstone with Kurt Russell.
And Charlton was?
Yeah. He had a smaller part.
I love that movie.
Oh, great movie. But he was the rancher that protected Val Kilmer, which was Doc Holliday.
Well, this signals the purge, the annual purge. So everyone out there, close your doors, lock everything up. Purge Anarchy, America the Beautiful by Five Alarm Music.
And
stay indoors.
This is 1480 AM KPHX, Breakthrough Entertainment.
They're banging. They're on the doors, Dave.
Oh, no, and we'll be right back.